The first ever Wintrust business lunch program to be held after the Congress has passed a massive tax cut plan or tax overhaul, you pick, tax reform, whatever. Terry Savage is on a phone line, and she has spent the morning reading the plan because no one else has, and she's here to explain every little thing in it. Terry, welcome back to the business lunch.
All 1,096 pages of it. I got some highlights and some lowlights. But I think we have to divide this discussion into two parts. The return you're going to file in April, that's for 2017, okay. And what you could do now, and then what is about to happen to you in 2018, and I'll go out on a limb with that and say if you live in Illinois and have a nice income, you're just going to probably wind up paying more taxes because you're going to lose a lot of deductions.
Yeah, and you know, where
you want to start for what to do with this year's return now or what to look forward to or not next year.
Let's do that real quickly. We don't have to spend too much time on it, but you can, and I'm going to do this. I'm pretty confident, although I haven't gotten final approval, prepay a big chunk of my property taxes. I looked up, Terry, you can do it in Lake County as well as in Cook County. Figure out what you owe for your property taxes. Pay it. I think in Lake County, they've got to have the check before December 29th, and I can deduct that then on this year's taxes because next year...
Yep. Your first installment of 2018 this year.
And
you
it's,
deduct it.
And it's not just if you pay... Because the limit is going to be on state and local taxes of $10,000 write-off. So it's not just if your property tax bill is $11,000 that you lose the grand. It's also everything you pay in state income taxes, right?
Exactly. Let's get to that in a moment. First of all, in Cook County, cookcountytreasurer.com, you can click, you can pay online right out of your bank account. You don't have to go anywhere. It's easy to do. You could put your address in, get your property PIN number. You can find out what the bill is going to be that's due in March, and you can pay it right out of your bank account, assuming you have the money. That's a good thing to do. Obviously, Lake County as well. Now, let's make it clear. A lot of people have emailed me or posted questions. You can prepay property taxes. You cannot prepay any quarterly estimated state income tax that you might be having to pay in January. Only property taxes. Next year, your limit on both those deductions together, your property and the income taxes you pay on your paycheck, that limit will be $10,000, whether you're single or filing jointly, $10,000. And it is a real blow to especially think about people in New York who pay city taxes and state taxes and property taxes that are huge. But also think about people here in Chicago who may, by the way, have a vacation home, a cottage even. That's a few $1,000 more in property taxes.
You know, I'm willing to give people the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes I'm naive in thinking that they're doing what's right. It seems to me that this particular tack in the tax overhaul is the most political and punitive because it's a Republican tax plan, and the states that are impacted by this are, by and large, big, fat, blue states.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. I'm astounded that even Republican senators from blue states would let this go through. I think this is going to be a sure campaign issue for the next session of Congress, but meanwhile, we're limited to that. Now, offsetting that, you get this double the standard deduction, but you lose things like personal exemptions and children's exemptions, but the child care credit goes up. This is going to be the Full Employment Act next year at this time for tax accountants and CPAs trying to help people figure it out. Winners in this, and there's some big losers, and I think Chicagoans will be, in general, among the big losers.
How about the country? When we look at this, is this, you know, we can moan about our own individual or anything, but if you look overall, is this going to be a big thing? Now, it's going to spur the economy. It seems to me that it's going to boost the stock market more than it's going to boost individual paychecks, and I guess that's great if you can afford to be in the stock market, but maybe not if you can't.
Well, so here's the deal. First of all, you're going to get, probably you'll see a little more in your paycheck when they come in with the new schedules next year. But whether that on an individual basis is enough to offset the loss of some deductions is going to be really important. Before we leave this year, let me say also, make next year's charitable contribution this year. This is, again, presuming you have the money, because next year you may not be itemizing your tax return. That's another story. The real benefit from this and this is a fingers crossed comment, is that we make America far more competitive again globally by the huge corporate tax cut. That stimulates enough growth that the economy booms. You, everybody who doesn't have a job gets a job. Everybody who has a job gets a raise. And we're all feeling more prosperous next year at this time. God willing, let's sit here next year and answer that question the week before at the end of the year. Did that corporate tax cut create economic growth and make us all feel better?
Or let me hear that we don't get to deduct anything? I'm going to interrupt you because we don't have a lot of time. And I want this to work. I want this to be a good thing. But the proponents say that it will create jobs. And it seems to me we're at full employment now. So who's going to work in those jobs?
No, it was, the question is, will that increase wages? Will that create better jobs? Steve, the jury's out on this. You know, it's economic theory that if you cut taxes, and we've had some past experience, that it's made the economy grow. We're growing only 3% now. It's maybe on the way to 4%. Will it create inflation, wage price inflation? This is going to be the most interesting year. I can't make a forecast. I'm looking forward to the Executives Club forecast luncheon in January. We'll share some of those with you.
Next year's going to be the most interesting year. What the hell was this year? I thought this was the most interesting year ever.
This was so interesting, but next year we're going to see theory at work in reality. It's just going to be amazing to see on a personal basis. I know it will cost me more in taxes. It'll cost you more in taxes. But the question is, will it be so beneficial to the economy that we'll feel better overall? That's the real question.
Let's hope so. All right, that's Terry Savage. Frank Sennett is just around the corner. We'll talk to him after the news headlines and a few stories. He's the Director of Digital Strategy at Crane Chicago Business. Greg Hines, the great political writer there, just put up a post where the Census Bureau says Illinois lost another 33,000 people this year. So we are now not even the fifth biggest state in the country. Terry Savage is on a phone line. She's not in this state, but we still count you as an Illinois resident, don't we, Terry?
No, I'm not in the next state. Can I get 30 more seconds on this tax bill? First of all, I'll bet you, I'll make you a bet right now, we'll do it next year, that we have more than 33,000 people leave the state of Illinois next year, given the fact that these taxes we pay are not going to be deductible. But I want to say one thing. Hidden and found out through the year, we will find a number of things in this tax bill that are going to surprise people. And I'm going to give you the first one. I meant to mention this early. If you're divorced, the bill changes the tax treatment of alimony, spousal support, in an important way. Under the new rules in this new bill, alimony will no longer be deductible for the person who pays it, and the money received as alimony or support or maintenance is no longer taxable income for the one receiving the money. That is going to upset a lot of apple carts in people's financial planning.
So the guy paying the alimony has to pay tax on it.
The guy paying it, don't be sexist, but whoever's paying has been able to deduct it. Hey, that's a cost. And the person receiving the support, alimony, maintenance, whatever you call it in every state, declared it as income. No longer.
Okay, so yeah, that'll have an impact, I would imagine, on alimony awards. Okay.
It will, and on people who have already been divorced, because it's going forward treatment. It's not just how you label it. It's going to be complicated. The lawyers will have a field day with this.
I always know when you're working the phones on behalf of this show, because the people you call us and say, what the heck is Terry after today? And we did hear from the Illinois Student Assistance Commission earlier.
Oh, wait, because I promised everybody I'd follow up.
Yeah.
And I talked to them.
Tell me what they learned. But also, you know, they had a good point, too, that we should talk to them. And I think we're working to schedule them a little bit later this week, hopefully, or next week, to get it from them.
Good.
But we talked about this was where you could prepay a semester of tuition. And they had the story last week. I think it was Cranes that they were no longer taking new contracts.
We discussed this last week. The idea was that you would prepay when your child at a very low rate, future tuition at today's rate. So if your child was an infant, 2, 3, or 4, and would not be going to college for 15, 17 years, that you would have the tuition prepaid. Well, due to some previous bad investments, due to the increases in tuition, et cetera, the actuaries determined there's no way the state could actually make good on those promises. And so the program didn't close down. They just stopped selling new contracts. And now College Illinois is deciding what it can and will be able to afford to pay. And for those who always thought it was College Illinois and a factual obligation of the state legislature to appropriate the money, it became very apparent that that's only a moral obligation of the state. Now, College Illinois says it has been working with state legislators a lot of organizations would like to get paid by the state, including bills that are owed, but they have been working with the state, but they're not selling any new contracts. And I was worried about two groups of people first. Students that are in college and expecting maybe the second semester of tuition to be paid out of these contracts. College Illinois has told me that they will pay those students who are currently in college. Then I said, well, what about the students graduating in applying for college now who thought they had prepaid tuition? What are you going to do for high school seniors who are applying to college for fall next year? And the actual quote is, well, while the actuarial projection shows the program could pay benefits for those who begin college in 2018 and graduate in 2022, and our plan is to continue to pay those benefits, high school seniors, going forward, it's important to note that actuarial assumptions and projections may change, and so basically they said we'll see. Part of it depends on the investment returns. Part of it depends on rising or not tuition. Part of it depends on whether the legislature will chip in. But I think it's a reassurance for those, number one, who are in college now that their credit, their contracts are good. A pretty good reassurance for those starting college in the fall that they should apply in Illinois where the contracts have some meaning because you can transfer the money to another state, but it won't buy as much tuition. And for those with younger children, you can ask them. There's a big gap here, and it's a sin. Other states have paid out portions of it or done various things. We'll see what Illinois decides to do.
All right, Terry Savage, we got to run, but you've got a very nice column up. I want to send people to it, terrysavage.com, and it has to do, you know, those of us who are saving and trying to get toward retirement, it's just a nice little story of someone who did and how they did it. Check that out at terrysavage.com. Listen,
we'll I'm going to put that out in my holiday email, so if you didn't get a chance to subscribe, do it now, and I'll send that out tomorrow.
All right, young lady, I'm off next week, so I hope you have a great new year, and I'll talk to you in 2018.
Absolutely.
Sitting alongside a very sunny Michigan Avenue on this December 20th, just a few days from Christmas, it's nice in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Frank Sennett is on a phone line. He is the Director of Digital Strategy at Crane Chicago Business and joins us on most Wednesdays. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
I don't know where to start, man. This story you sent me about this Jesus picture is just phenomenal.
Isn't that awesome?
It really is. But before we do that, Greg Hines just posted a story, and I made reference to it in the first half hour. The census numbers are out for the year ending June 30th. We lost another 33,000 people from Illinois. I don't know where they went, probably Florida, maybe Tennessee, but they're not in Illinois anymore, which knocks us down, I think, to the sixth most populous state in the country.
Yeah, and we're the only one of the top 10 states to be smaller now than 2010. So there is a trend, albeit a small trend, toward us going down. Well, everybody else holds serve or grows a little bit. And now we're trailing Pennsylvania.
But trailing Pennsylvania, we don't want to trail Pennsylvania in anything.
No, you know, we beat the Steelers earlier this year, and one of the few highlights for the Bears. So, you know, we got to overtake them in population.
Well, again, we'll watch that, and I'm sure the politicians will be jumping on it as we're in campaign season. But in all seriousness, you know, this we talked earlier about the tax bill, and the tax bill in many ways takes on blue states, including Illinois, when it comes to limits on some of their deductions, and that could be an incentive for some to transfer even more. So we'll see what happens there. Okay. Go back to middle school if you went to a Catholic school, or, you know, wherever, if you went by a church. And not just Catholic schools. It strikes me this is more a Protestant picture than not. I don't know why. But think of the most famous sort of image of Jesus you have, an oil painting, and turns out it's probably by this guy named Warner Salmon, right? Warner Salmon?
Right. And he painted this 41 by 46 inch oil painting, and you know, that painting is something we've all seen. It was reproduced more than half a billion times.
Wow. And then Mark Guarino wrote the story for you guys. I want to give him credit. And he painted this picture, but was it post-World War II or post-World War I? When was it?
So he painted the portraits post-war and post-World War II.
Okay.
And he became one of the most famous unknown artists of the 20th century, a bit of an oxymoron.
Which is kind of a funny thing,
titled,
right?
Yeah, it's titled Head of Christ, the portrait.
And look it up at at the Crane Chicago, at chicagobusiness.com, because you will recognize it. Okay, so there's that very famous picture that no one really knew who he was. He was an illustrator for magazines and advertisement and things like this, but he created this image. He painted five of them, and lo and behold, there's a guy on the north side who thinks he purchased one, what, at a Salvation Army store?
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally that thing where you find the most, you know, worthwhile piece of art, the highest priced piece of art hiding at somebody's yard sale.
Or, it's like a Dick Van Dyke episode.
Yeah, exactly. So Salvation Army, we had, you know, somebody walking around, Paul Beatty in the north side apartment hanging there now. He found it at a Salvation Army, and he thought, you know, there may be something here, and it's one of the originals. He paid $100 for it at the Salvation Army in River West. And, you know, it's a very pricey piece of art that he found.
It's just a great story on so many levels that Mark wrote, because it's such a Chicago story. Here's this illustrator who kind of labored in anonymity. I mean, 500 million people saw his work and still no one knew who he was, living on the north side of Chicago. And this painting, lo and behold, shows up at a Salvation Army. And now another guy who, I mean, collects sort of trashy stuff, has put it up on his wall.
And so here's the kicker, is that, you know, you'd think, well, this has been, you know, reproduced 500 million times. Art dealers, not so interested
in it.
They
don't want it.
Got it in storage, and it may be only worth $25,000 or so on the current market. So, yeah, you'd think, well, you know, I hit the lottery here, but, you know, kind of in a sense of, you know, you made an amazing discovery, but in terms of cashing in, you know, he's not going to be able to retire to the Bahamas.
And the art dealers don't want it so much because it didn't really break new ground. It wasn't anything sort of provocative. It just a beautiful picture of Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, maybe that's why it was so popular, so ubiquitous, is that it doesn't offend anyone. It's comforting. It's, you know, a very accessible piece of art. And maybe those are all things that don't make it so sexy on the secondary art market.
So I know that he was thinking maybe it could be worth $100,000. Look, $25,000 on a $100 investment, that's not too shabby either.
I'd still take that, yeah.
And Salvation Army would too, right? They're kind of asking that it be returned?
Yeah, they say they regretted the oversight that led to this donated piece of art being purchased at one of their thrift stores, and they'd welcome the return to their collection. So, you know, I mean, it is a painting of Jesus. There's a certain season that we're in now. It'd be interesting if, you know, if there was a final twist in this story somehow.
That he brought it back to the Salvation Army and all of the people there benefited from it.
Or sold it and took a world cruise. I don't know. It's a choose your own adventure.
Yeah, I would help the poor, but man, there'd be a world cruise mixed in there because it seems like there's enough of there's enough oil painting there to go around. I don't know. Great story.
Yeah.
Check it out at chicagobusiness.com. Okay, so one of the pieces of property that we talk about a lot on this show is one that a lot of us drive under every day, the old Chicago Post Office. They're trying yet again to remake it, and they picked up a little bit of cash.
That's right. Now, it's feeling more and more real that the old post office is going to be redeveloped, because the developer just got a $500 million, you can say it like Dr. Evil, construction loan to finance the project. So, you know, all this talk for years, stops and starts, pie in the sky, think there's actual money attached. The whole redevelopment will cost more than $800 million. So they're $500 million of the way there. It's a key step to making this a reality.
Oh, maybe the Beatty guy could give $25,000 that he got for the Jesus picture.
I like the way you think.
And get a wing or something. Okay, so if
it's a Christmas miracle.
Exactly. If it's a Christmas miracle, the post office is finally inhabited again. So
that's right.
So if they're 500 on the way to 800 million with the funding, you said it's beginning to look like it's going to happen. I mean, what are the prospects? Is it look nearly certain now?
Well, they say the $500 million loan replaces a $90 million bridge loan from Chase that the developer 601 West used to buy the building, and so far they have raised $250 million in equity for the project. So that, according to my math, that gets them pretty close.
And what are they going? What do they hope that it looks like? I know it's one of the spots that comes up when people talk about Amazon. I don't know how likely that is, but what is it that they're hoping that this building will become?
Yeah, well, if you look at the artist rendering, again, at chicagobusiness.com, one of the things that really sticks out for me is that the roof of the post office is like this great, amazing green space, this kind of parkland that is up above. And then they would take the 2.1 million square feet of building space below and turn it into an office building with, you know, really high-end amenities, trying to get some big companies to move there. Hopefully, you know, Amazon might be in the mix. So a really stellar, you know, gut rehab with high-end office tenants, and then this kind of beautiful parkland on the top, on the roof.
I mean, it does lend itself to becoming just sort of, in many ways, a city of its own, because it's got the area for it, and as you said, it's got the different ecospaces for it. You know, you could check into the old post office and not have to leave for years.
That's right, and every day at around 5:15 p.m., you can park under it for about 5 minutes while you're waiting to move on to the expressway.
Sounds like you've been there before. Frank Sennett, the director of Digital Strategy, Crane Chicago Business. Read more of these stories at chicagobusiness.com. Hey, buddy, have a great Christmas, and I'll check in with you in the new year, okay?
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and everybody else.
All right, business lunch, right? It's lunchtime. You probably, if you're like a lot of us, are concerned about the calories you're consuming at lunch, at breakfast, dinner, especially around a holiday table. But what about in the air? Charles Platkin is with us. He is the diet detective, and they've been looking at airline food of all things. Charles, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
All right, tell me a little bit about the Diet Detective. What are you up to here?
Well, I've been the Diet Detective for about, actually a journalist in Florida nicknamed me that about 20 years ago or more. So, I look at all things related to food and try to condense it and come up with ways of looking at it that most people don't have the time to, but are really interested in.
What do you think is the, and I want to talk about the airlines, I'm sorry to go off on my own tangent here, but what do you think we misunderstand the most when it comes to our nutrition?
You know, I think that we really think we're doing it much better than we are.
Yeah.
even when we're really trying, okay, we're amiss. And I think, not amiss, basically amiss. We're missing it. And I think that it's mostly, you know, because of a lot of, you know, wrong information out there. A lot of myths. A lot of confusion. I think in the media, we cause a lot of it. One minute we're supposed to eat butter. One minute we're not.
Right.
One minute we're supposed to eat eggs. One minute we're not. One minute diet soda is diet. The next minute it causes diabetes. So, you know, these kinds of, you know, confusing issues really just, you know, make the consumer sit there and go, let me just eat whatever I want. And even if they are concerned and do care, they're eating more calories than they think, and they're exercising a lot less than they believe.
Yeah, and it is a problem because there's so much information there, and you can get it to support whatever you want to believe, whether, you know, regardless of how factual it might be or confusing. All right, let's go up into the air, 33,000 feet here. We're flying in an airplane, and they bring us the food, put it down on the plate. Should we be worried about our airline meals and nutrition there? I mean, it's not like we eat that much of it.
Yeah, well, just a couple quick things. So just to reset, they're not putting anything down on your plate. they're first, you have to take your credit card out.
Right, right.
I mean, the airlines are, you know, are starting to, believe it or not, give free food again on transcontinental flights. However, mostly you're paying. And what you're paying for is usually not that healthy, and it's typically, you know, in limited selection. I was on a flight yesterday and on American Airlines, and you know, I always pack food, but I wanted to see if they had something to eat. And even what they said that they were supposed to have, which I listed on my airline survey, they did not provide. So, you know, really you don't want to get caught on an airplane without thinking ahead about what you're going to bring to eat, because most of the time you underestimate the amount of time you're in the air. So for a 3-hour flight, it could be a lot more. And not only that, with a 3-hour flight, you got to remember to include the hour and a half or 2 hours to get to the airport,
right,
sit there in line and so forth. And also on the way back, you know, on when you land, you have to think about, you know, getting to your destination, rushing, trying to get off the plane that you've been sitting on for hours and hours. So a three-hour flight could be 6 hours of no eating or grab-and-go food.
All right, so who does best if we do have to eat the food that they're offering? Which airline would give us the most nutritious options?
So Virgin and is one, and they're tied with Delta. And Delta, you know, I got to give them kudos because they really have done a substantial job, you know, being such a major airline carrier. Okay, Virgin's not nearly as large. So I would say, you know, Delta, even though Delta and Virgin were tied, that I'm really impressed with what Delta is doing.
All right.
Their meals are much better. And so are their snacks.
You know, this. So we got about 20 seconds left. The hometown airline, United Airlines, not so good?
Not so good. It's funny because, years ago, about 6-7 years ago, they were number one, and they were really innovative. They just completely dropped the ball, and they're not focused like they should be.
Listen, I'm sorry we're so short today, Charles. I hope we can talk again because I'm very interested in this.
That would be fantastic. Always available.
Charles Platkin, he is the Diet Detective. Check it out, dietdetective.com.